CliffCentral.com.
Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Right, folks, good morning. Welcome to Auto Central, brought to you by Auto Trader, your trusted motoring marketplace. Join the conversation, hashtag Auto Central and at Auto Trader SA. Not a full studio with guests today, but the usual suspects. Chad, how are you doing? Long time?
Not usual.
Well, you know, you've been...
I've been hit and miss at best.
You've been around a couple of times, eh? You've been in the studio before? Plenty of times.
Yeah. Good morning. How are we doing?
And George, how are you doing?
Good, and you?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Good weekend, guys.
Got me in the seat at the right time.
Just in time, eh? Just in time. Was there traffic?
No. I was on a couple of phone calls.
I was going to say. Always on a call. So, full show today. And I think we're going to kick off and just have a look at kind of what's happened over the last couple of days in the motoring industry and in this crazy world that we play in. And
over the last 2 weeks, absolute insanity.
It's absolutely been crazy. So let's get under the hood and take a look at what's been going down in the last couple of weeks. Good news for motorists, and it's always nice to start with the positive stories, that current conditions suggest that road users could be looking at a petrol price decline of between 60 and 64 cents a litre by the end of this month.
My question, I heard about that, and it's, you know, it's swings and roundabouts really, because they're going to drop it one moment and they're going to pick it up. It's, our fuel still isn't where it needs to be priced.
No, sure, listen.
And it's still quite pricey. On the world spectrum, we're still relatively cost effective.
Yeah.
But if you take a look at it in terms of our earnings, it's still a pricey commodity, and there's a lot of taxes in that can be avoided. So they're going to drop it now, but only to hike it up a little later on. That's always what I'm a little weary of.
No, sure. Look, it goes up and goes down, but I mean, you know, we'll take it when we can get it.
Absolutely.
You
know, I don't know. We're going to cash in
and fill up as much as you can. Maybe people start stockpiling the stuff.
But have you ever noticed that this happens at
crucial times.
So leading into April, you're going to get a decrease. We saw it this year.
Mm.
Going into July, you're going to get a decrease. Going into December, you're going to get a decrease.
You mean it's because of the holidays and the road use?
Because of the holidays, they're trying to promote road use and people to travel. It does. It works for tourism.
Buy a 100-litre tank and keep it. Oh, no, 100 litres is not enough. 1,000-litre tank, keep it somewhere.
The thing is, fuel doesn't keep. So you need to use it. You can only keep it for so long. And the savings that you're going to generate from that are really minimal, hey?
Yeah, no, I suppose the only reason I'm saying it is we're in the hands of the powers that be.
No, exactly.
Suck
it up.
Yeah, fill your car up when the price comes down. Don't fill it up before then if you can.
Yeah, stay away from unnecessary driving. Drive when you absolutely have to, and try and use alternative means of transport if you really want to.
100%. I see that.
Get on a freaking bicycle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, if you're close enough to work,
why not?
Oh, exactly right.
I mean, you advocate scooter use, so.
I do. And
but not in winter. I haven't seen you in ages.
I have been riding the scooter. I see Ford South Africa, Ford SA issued a recall for about 15,600 older Figos and Icon models due to a potential fire risk. And obviously, having a look at it, I don't know all the details, but it seems like there's a power steering fluid leak that's kind of been picked up.
Yeah, so it seems that there's a hose that's perishing and that could lead, and this is worst case scenario, could lead to a fire.
Yes.
What they're saying is it's basically perishing, or it's just not weathering well. It's not holding up to the conditions and the wear and tear in that, and it's deteriorating to the point where it can cause a problem and in extreme cases fire.
You're good on Ford for getting ahead of the problem, you know, before there's any
there was a Figo fire that happened. It was a Figo, it wasn't an Icon. There was a Figo fire that happened, but they can't say whether it was or wasn't related to this. And the thing is, Ford is being extremely proactive like this, and I'm going to commend them for it, but we know why. It's because they're under the microscope after the Cougar debacle.
Yes.
That they know that any sort of little idiosyncrasy, a little fault with their vehicles that's appearing in more than one, is just really going to start digging up dead horses and
exactly.
Dinosaurs.
The dirty washing is going to
come out, and they don't need that coming out again. But this is hurting them in the long run, eh?
You know what, I suppose if you're a consumer, you are going to ask the question, like, am I going to have issues down the line with this vehicle? And it's not like they do it intentionally, but, you know, things do go wrong. So, you know, you really have no control over that.
I haven't done the research, but I do want to check into this, because I'm not sure, and I was actually discussing it yesterday, is whether this is now based These vehicles are coming out of the same plant as the Cougars, whether this is that Spanish plant problem, or as far as I know, these are Indian manufactured. And if it is, that means that there's two separate plants, and that it's just screaming that there's insufficient testing into local conditions.
Yeah.
And the long-term testing of the components that they're using. That's worrisome.
That, yeah. Well, will you ever look
into
that?
I'm going to take a look into
that,
and
he's coming one of the shows.
Keep your eyes on AutoTrader social media, so yes. Twitter and the likes and that, and we'll see if we can piece something together, the site as well, and just let you guys know what is the story with that.
Fantastic. Then, Cape Town. So, there's a guy driving a taxi, right, who gets pulled over because he's obviously breaking the rules of the road, which is why he drew attention to himself. When they opened the taxi, 32 passengers climbed out.
32.
14 of them were standing. Now,
where do you stand in a taxi?
Well, that's the question I've asked myself. You know, if we just unpack a quantum quickly, you got a driver's seat, you got a passenger seat. Then you've got three rows of benches. Am I right?
Well, the very first one's got three.
Yes.
And then you've got the others got four, I think.
Four. So you
four, eight.
12.
13, there's got to be one more seat in this. I think the front one lifts
up. Yes,
it
opens and falls down.
14,
so you're 15 up legally.
Yeah.
32 passengers.
That's in there like this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, that's
not a comfortable way to travel.
That's a box of sardines kind of travel.
Just for everybody's benefit, Chad's kind of...
Standing up and showing
standing
me what it's like
standing
in a taxi, yeah. And then another thing was, the guy didn't have the taxi driver didn't have a license.
No, yeah. I didn't even know that. I saw the video.
So breaking the rules of the road, unlicensed, and over, well, you can't even say like overpacked.
But isn't that a bit of a paradox? If you don't have a license, do you know that that's overloading?
Well, I suppose you can't
have a license. You shouldn't be bloody driving the thing. I mean, there's some common sense involved there.
Yeah. Well,
the problem with common sense is it isn't.
It's not common sense, yeah. Then another incident, and this obviously went viral on social media, but they caught a truck on camera. Obviously, some guy driving behind with a dash cam of some sort filmed a road hauling truck overtaking another truck on the N1 in Cape Town. And it wasn't that he was just overtaking. It was overtaking over a solid white line and into oncoming traffic. There were cars traveling in the other direction. So the cars that were coming towards the truck had to obviously move over to the left and drive in the yellow line because these two trucks were neck and neck.
You have no idea how often that happens. On my road trips to Cape Town or to Durban, I've seen that. Well, Durban not so much anymore because there's a lot of dual carriage. But I've seen it on the road to Cape Town where trucks overtake each other.
Mm.
On blind rises,
yes.
and the only way for you to do anything is to go into that emergency lane.
Yeah, that's, I think, you know, these truck drivers must get really, really, you know, I'll say pissed off because those trucks only go so fast up a hill, and you've got another oak who's overtaking you, and it's almost like you see someone trying to overtake you, know you're not going to sit behind him because he is going to have you, and then, you know, the truck on the left kind of speeds up because he doesn't want the guy to pass, which just causes issues for the motorists behind him.
I want to defend them a little bit because I can understand how difficult their job is.
Look,
bringing that up to speed and bringing it down from speed is time consuming.
Yeah, it's not like driving
it's
a car.
It's not. And these guys are doing long hauls, and especially, I mean, I do the N3 trek down to the South Coast and the likes on a regular enough basis to see them down and the Penrhenans. And two things. One, the gross majority of them are actually quite well behaved.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the typical apple that spoils the batch. And that's the one that you notice. You don't really notice the ones that are sitting there bumper to bumper and they're just patiently waiting as they're climbing Penrhenans or something of the sort or sitting there. But I feel for them, and motorists, I can imagine, irritate them to no end because
they spend all day in the road. That is their office. Yeah.
That is their office. And then to have ignorant motorist in a car just sit there and cut you up and force you to brake and break your momentum and that. I feel for the guys because there are a whole bunch of motorists that just don't consider them. And with a little more consideration to truck drivers and freight drivers and long haulers and that, we could alleviate a lot of the problems that they are causing.
Those who are actually patient and don't do what Tyron's describing, get hold of your mates that are doing these things and tell them off.
Well, the thing is, this truck in question here was completely branded. This car is obviously representing some kind of business, and it had telephone numbers and logos all over it. So you know, it's not like you can't get caught
out.
That
thought
train
only has one station, and it's not very far away. The train of thought just doesn't go.
Yeah. I mean, essentially, those guys are all professional drivers. That is what they do, you know, and hats off to them because, yeah, I mean, I did a drive down to Durban 2 weekends ago. And yeah. Well, last weekend, actually, and it's, you know, it's not a long haul, but it's a haul. So to do it on a regular basis.
They're
in
not
a truck,
doing it once a day.
No, they're doing it two to three times a day. Yeah, no, it's...
So, you know, I really do feel for the guys. They do... Listen, just completely left field. Did you see the drama that unfolded yesterday in Santon?
No, what happened in Santon yesterday?
Yesterday was the day before.
Luckily, I wasn't anywhere near there.
No.
Yeah. Ferrari 488.
Oh, yes, I did. I saw it.
In Santon. And
George
What was the profile of the driver?
We don't know. We don't know. But there's actually dash cam footage that's come out of the accident that, okay, cuts right before, but you can see what unfolded.
Yeah.
And they're traveling down, and I think both parties are to blame here. Mazda CX-5 pulled out in front of it, crossing over the intersection. You know, both traveling the same direction, and the Mazda crossing the path of the Ferrari. And just turned in front of it. You can see here that, yeah, the Mazda's sight was obstructed.
Yeah.
So they sort of thinking that there was a gap, and yes, the Ferrari was doing a speed that was, I'm not going to say illegal or like tearing around, but it was just possibly too fast for the conditions.
Come on, it's a Ferrari.
Yeah, it's driving badly. Yeah, just let this
but listen, I mean, George, I mean, okay, there's the video is a little longer, and you see that they're carrying a little bit of a head of steam. I'm not saying that he's doing...
Is that dash cam inside the Ferrari?
That's inside the Ferrari. I'm not saying he's doing 130, 140 kilometers
an
hour.
But, but
he's probably not doing the 60 that he should be doing. He's probably doing closer to 80.
Yeah. Yeah.
And 20 km an hour makes a world of difference. I mean, that's 30% higher.
Sure. Well, anyway, don't drive like a chop if you own a Ferrari, please. The next item here for discussion, quickly, just an update on Opel, chaps. I know that there was a media briefing... last week.
Yeah,
I believe and it was last week, Lawrence was there from our team. There is an article on autotrader.co.za in our news and review section, so you can go and read up on it. But what is the current status with Opel?
Well, the big thing was that GM pulled out of the country. That was one of the big announcements. Yeah. And that was, they'd actually been, and we were predicting something, because they styled this back. Let's go back a few months. Internationally, the Opel brand was sold to the PSA Group,
correct,
which is a Peugeot and Citroen group. And that really got alarm bells going locally, because we sat there and we said, Peugeot and Citroen has actually pulled out of the country locally. December they pulled out of South Africa, so you can no longer get hold of Citroens. Peugeot is still around, and they're doing okay, but not great.
Yeah.
They're nowhere near where they were doing in the, let's say, the 80s and possibly even turn of the millennium, you know. And Opel is considerably larger here.
Yes.
So it didn't make sense that the bigger group would be falling under the smaller group locally. But overseas, it's the other way around, where Peugeot is larger than Opel, and it makes sense to absorb a smaller company.
Sure.
And so that had us a little worried, and we were a little concerned, and then we heard that GM was pulling out and taking Chev with it. And we said, well, part of GM is Opel.
Mm.
And Chev was confirmed, but Opel wasn't confirmed. So we had suspicions that one of them was going to take over. We heard that Isuzu was going to be continuing with the GM efforts and honoring warranties and the like. So if you do have a Chev or you do have an Opel or something, you don't need to panic, because Isuzu is still going to be taking those. And they even bought the Stroondale plant, GM plant. Yeah. So we
all three models are going to be supported, right, for the next 10 years.
Now they are, yes. Mm. Because Williams Hunt has just stepped up to the plate and said that they are going to take over distribution of Opel in South Africa.
No, but that's a different thing. So that's the recent news in terms of Opel kind of being back in the country after not being in the country for a little while.
Yeah, for about 3 weeks.
For about 3 weeks. But right from the get-go, GM has said that they would
GM said they would.
Cars, whether they're in the country or not.
I do feel that that was now just pending the signature and the confirmation of the Williams Hunt one, because I believe that the Williams Hunt dealerships are now going to be honouring the Opel warranties and that. So it's not exactly going to fall under Isuzu. It's going to fall under Williams Hunt.
Because Opel's going to become a standalone brand.
If PSA didn't do what they've done, more than likely the Opels would have been supported by potentially Isuzu, right? Or somebody else?
No, they would have been. They would have been. If Williams Hunt hadn't climbed in there, they would have been supported by Isuzu, yes. Mm. But now that Williams Hunt has climbed in, Isuzu sort of handed it over and said, okay, you guys... Yeah. Part and parcel.
And I think brilliant for Opel.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's very good. I mean, well, it's a fantastic brand in the country.
It's a great brand in the country.
Footprint.
It won Car of the Year.
Yeah.
Exactly. So they've got some fantastic offerings now.
Obviously there was some, you know, it wasn't just let's have a press conference. There was something very strategic as well behind what happened at the conference, because they obviously gave an update on their situation and what's happening. And then I see that they unveiled the new Opel Crossland X.
They're moving up and they're going into the larger crossover and SUV segments and that. We've got the Mokka X and the likes, but now Crossland and then I believe it is Grandland are the two models. Grandland we're expecting next year. Crossland we're expecting end of this year. And we've already got Mokka and Mokka X, which has also just been revitalized and that. Yeah. The new Astra and that, well, it's not new. It's about a year old now. Yeah. But wonderful, wonderful vehicle. They've got some fantastic offerings, cracking offerings, and I think they just did that just to sweeten and just to confirm.
Well, I think that's it's kind of sign of solidarity. That we're solid and we're good, and we're even bringing new cars to the market. So don't really stress about it too much.
Yeah,
we're not panicking.
No, exactly. We're confident enough that we can do this. We're launching new models and we're going to be introducing. So don't you guys panic. It was just that confirmation.
Yeah. Well, that's so good on the guys from Opel and you know Susan and stuff, and I think, you know, like we spoke about in the last show, those brands will continue to do well in this country. I have no doubt.
I still maintain it's got very little to do with which brands are in the country and got very much to do with consumer demand.
Yeah.
And when a brand leaves the country, it is not the end of the world.
Yeah.
Why? No. Because consumers still need to drive cars in this country. We don't have public transport. Mm. We don't have all those things. So one brand will just turn into a consumer's passion for another brand.
I feel that from the manufacturer's point of view. You know, you've got the likes of, I don't want to say the Peugeots and the Citroens and the likes, but let's say Alfa Romeo, because that one's fairly fresh. I'm actually driving a fantastic one at the moment. But they don't have a great amount of offerings, you know, sort of a little hit and miss, especially in the 90s in terms of their offerings locally. And what happened there was the true Alfisti or the Alfa Romeo enthusiasts that were diehard, that would put up with any sort of nonsense that the brand was known for.
Breakdowns.
And, unreliability or service issues or something of the sorts. The proper true enthusiast was now almost forced to go to another brand. Mm. And there's always that chance that you're going to really, truly lose somebody to another brand. If he climbs into a BMW or Mercedes-Benz, he may just fall in love with it.
Exactly.
And he may never go back, because what was he left with? A sour taste in his mouth from the brand. And now that he's found a new passion for something else, you're not going to get him back. It's going to be really, really hard to get him back.
But that's okay, right? Because at the end of the day,
they're still purchasing vehicles.
They're still purchasing cars. Yeah. They're still economic activity.
For the economy, yes. But for the individual manufacturers, I do feel for them. Because then they really got their work cut out to convince people that, listen, we're back, we're good.
Well, let's just take an example. Like, I see that the Chevy Ute, which is what we know locally as the Corsa Bucky.
That's actually a big one.
Now, I had friends who drove that. It looked like a great Bucky. Mm. Oh, sorry. it was a Bucky or a utility vehicle.
But just rewind a little bit.
Yeah.
So before the Chev utility or the Corsa Bucky, okay. What was the little Bucky before that?
There was the Datsun, and then there was the Nissan.
And then something happened, which is Corsa brought out this phenomenal little Bucky, and I reckon what Chad is talking about happened.
Yes, guys just
flipped over to the Corsa.
So the car sales are still there.
So now the Corsa utility is going to go. What's going to happen? Somebody else is going to bring a car.
Now that's actually quite a lot of drama. I'm going to take a few minutes on that one, because this is, and reading that they're actually going to be dropping the Corsa utility. It's the Chev utility.
Yeah.
Chev Ute. Let's call it the Corsa Bucky for the sake of this argument. I mean, I drove one and I really enjoyed it. I drove the
C. It's a nice little car.
Mm. The C one. And if I could find one of those, I'd still do it. I'd use it as a filming vehicle. I'd use it as a recreational. Wonderful. What a fantastic little car. Before the announcement was made that the Chev utility, this little Corsa Bucky was going to now be pulled, there were only two options in the half tonner segment, which is the Nissan NP200 and the Chev utility.
Yes.
Okay. You're now losing one of them. Nissan is smiling all the way to the bank.
Well, they've got to capitalize.
Both of them are locally produced.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which means that they can keep the costs down. There's no import. They're not held at the whim of the exchange rate and the likes. So Nissan's smiling all the way to the bank.
Okay.
I believe it's actually foolish to can the Corsa utility. That Chevy Ute. I believe that's a poor, poor move, because it's just going to... And if there's no... If there's a monopoly, which the Nissan's going to have with the NP200, you end up resting on your laurels and not pushing, innovating. You just believe that there's a can-do attitude that will do. Let's just push it out, and because there's nothing that's actually threatening you. And as soon as you've got a little
bit of I think somebody else will do something.
It would probably be wise for Isuzu to take that over and recreate the Corsa Bucky as an Isuzu.
Yeah, you know, KB Light or something. Yeah. Whatever it might be.
KB Light, there we go. I like that.
It's the diet version.
Yeah.
And that would be a fantastic move, I believe, but not knowing the financial implications behind it and the monetary
investment
and that type of thing, doesn't make financial sense for them. Yeah. I believe it on the outside, looking in, it looks like it would be. There's still enough of them.
But I think South Africa has a market for a vehicle like that.
The one that mobilizes the small to medium enterprise. Drivers, deliveries.
What were those called? Bucky Brigade.
In the UK, it was the white van man because it was the Ford Transit that did it. Now you're going to need to go to a VW Caddy, which is no longer a Bucky.
No,
it's not the sort of thing you could load a dirt bike into.
Yeah, no.
Because it was the vehicle that you
limited
could
use by the roof. Yeah.
On a daily basis, and you know, you sort of still looked okay, and you didn't feel bad pitching up at the bribe with your Corsa Bucky or something of sorts. You could load the dirt bike up, but then during the week you were running deliveries, you were going and hanging curtains or putting flooring in or being a plumber or something of the sorts, using that vehicle for work.
Yeah.
It was mobilizing, you know, small enterprises and the upstarts, and we don't have the Proton Arena anymore. We don't have the Bantam. We don't have the Mazda Rustler. We're missing a lot that should be mobilizing. You now need to go into a small panel van. So it's like the Caddy. Even some of the panel vans are missing in action.
Yeah, but
pushing people into Datsun Go panel vans.
What killed those?
Theft.
No. What killed those utility vehicles? It was the Chevy.
Well, Chevy.
The Corsa utility killed those other ones because the sales just wasn't there, or just weren't there. So for me, it's, you know, Chevy utility leaving the country is gonna be good for Isuzu and the others, and maybe we'll see Mazda bring something back.
100%.
I'm gonna counter that one and debate it a little, because what happened there was they fell away because they couldn't stay up to date. They were using old technology to create their vehicles. They didn't have the sales, but they weren't prepared to invest in it. Mm. And I believe that had they invested in it and created something on a newer platform with better interior trimmings, better ride quality, better engines to compete with the Corsa came in and competed with them and blew them out of the water.
Exactly. But maybe now that's the gap. Maybe they see it. I mean, there's a lot of maybes.
Well, let's hope. Let's hope.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that one and just see where it's...
It's going to elevate the quality.
Yeah.
Because if you sit there and you just rest on those laurels, like I was saying, it's going to start getting dated.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what kept the MP200 and the Corsa going was the fact that there was rivalry.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We'll see what happens. I'm sure that sooner enough somebody will go, hang on a sec, he has an opportunity. Maybe even a locally manufactured one, you know, could be nice for the market.
If VW did it again, not the Caddy, you know, like a little proper...
Polo Bucky.
They've got the 9-in-3, the 9-inch chassis that they can use, that they're punching Vivos out.
Yeah.
You know...
Who knows? Pleasure. Cool. There was mass chaos in Johannesburg last week, Thursday, gents. And we actually had a group going with all the Auto Trader staff. George, and you were one of the first guys to put a message out. And I woke up going, another taxi strike? Planned
this
taxi
is
strike?
Going to suck.
And we know that it was...
Well, it started at 2 o'clock in the morning, right?
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, the N1, the N3, the N12, most of the... roads around Midrand were heavily affected because the taxi owners and people in the industry marched to the taxi finance offices in Midrand to hand over a memorandum of grievances.
Did they end up doing it?
Well, I don't know if anything got handed over
because
I was 600 k's away, which was fantastic, so I wasn't affected. But I mean, you know, George,
I think,
was,
you know, I don't know. It just seemed to fizzle out during the course of the morning.
Mm.
You know, I thought to myself,
lost momentum in a way.
Yeah, I did. It lost momentum and started at 2 o'clock in the morning. I don't know if the guys got tired and needed some sleep or
did whatever, did they not just move off the roads and move closer to the Santaka offices?
It could have been that.
And
yes.
It was now this mass movement protest, so they were just pulling it out of the visible eye personnel.
Because I mean, they wanted to disrupt traffic and make a statement.
Well, I think they made a statement, no doubt.
Oh, no,
I mean, it wasn't
did.
Just the roads that were affected. If you think about it, I mean, you're just reading the articles and there's lots of stuff online. Kids were kept home from schools, so that's work that children have to catch up. How many, you know, business people couldn't get onto the highway to get to work? Guys that missed flights to go to wherever they needed to travel to, train drivers, bus drivers, these guys couldn't get to their stations to, you know, help commuters that use those modes of transport. So I think that they really did... If it was shaking things up a bit, I think they did it.
That was accomplished.
There's always just
a couple of concerns with this. Emergency services.
Yeah.
You know, if they need to get somewhere, they need to get somewhere.
Yeah.
And the collateral losses due to something like this is not right. That's inhumane.
Let's not even get onto that topic.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. One of the most irritating things for me is when a motorist does not move out of the way of an emergency vehicle.
I
was like, what is that? If is that your mother or your sister inside that ambulance? Or they're going to fetch one of your family members?
Yeah. Yeah.
Would you expect everyone to move out of the way?
You would. 100%.
Of course you would.
You would want it. You'd be praying to whatever deity you believe in that everybody moves out of the way.
Well, actually, coming to studio this morning, and unfortunately, this is just what happened. So it's not like I'm sitting here trying to fabricate stuff, but a taxi... Everyone sitting in a queue at a stop street to turn left onto Republic Road. Taxi came down, oncoming traffic, obviously jumping the line.
Mm.
And it was so nice to see a Metro cop sitting in a car park waiting. And as soon as he saw this taxi, this cop's face just lit up. He's like, come, China, let's go pull in. And it's so nice to see that. It's so nice to see that roads are being policed. And, you know, we spoke about there was
a story, active policing.
And there is plans in place to have more police on the road, which is really, really fantastic. But let's just put ourselves in the shoes of the taxi owners.
Yeah.
Now,
Double-edged sword.
The reason why they're moaning is obviously the massive interest rates that they're paying on these taxis. It's
28% or something like that.
28%. Right? I'm just going to run through these numbers quickly. If you were going to, you know, so you want to buy a taxi, right? So the price of a Quantum is about 450.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you put down a 50,000 rand deposit, so you're left with 400K that you're now going to...
Nearest maximum difference of 10% deposit. Yeah.
Okay, so your interest rate is 28.5%. Mm. Your term is 66 months.
That's more than twice prime.
Mm. Exactly.
What's prime?
Your
monthly
12.5,
just over 10 or 11 or something.
Really? Okay.
Your monthly repayments are 12.5. You're paying about 2,500 rand insurance on that vehicle, so you're in for 15 over your term, your 66 month term. You're paying over R1 million for a vehicle
if you're doing it by the numbers.
If you're doing it by the numbers,
and you're keeping that insurance on it,
yes,
not just to get the finance and then drop the insurance,
sure,
which we know is a very popular South African trait.
But these guys are, in their own rights, entrepreneurs starting. I mean, if you're buying a taxi for the first time, that's a little business that you're trying to run. How, you can't run a business when you're hosting three times the initial price of the vehicle. And the motorists, the guys that are selling these vehicles, there's obviously profit in there for them as well. So where's all that other money going? Is it going to the banks? Is it going to the taxi finance kind of institution?
That's where it is, yeah. They were making a song and dance saying, no, Toyota needs to make the vehicles cheaper. And it wasn't Toyota's issue. Toyota's got their price.
Yeah.
What's happening is that the financing is throwing that 28% on. And I can sort of understand where they're coming from by putting such a high interest rate on it. One, it's high risk, and it's a business tool.
Okay.
You're purchasing something that is going to generate income.
Yeah.
It's not being purchased for personal use or to get you to a place of employment. This is a business tool.
Sure.
And if you go and you finance a horse and trailer, I can pretty much tell you that your interest rates are going to be similar.
Similar.
It's a business tool.
So a bank set interest rates depending on the risk that they see in that particular finance deal or whatever it is. They set the interest rate based on the risk that they want to bear or that the appetite they have. Now, I mean, I don't know the intricacies of how taxi finance works. But it would be a signal to me that the banks think that this is risky.
Well,
that the banks see, well, maybe they're not going to get their money.
Mm. Yeah.
And if they're not going to get their money, then wouldn't the interest rate is high.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me if there's a high default rate.
It could be. It could be that there's a historical high default rate, and that this is the reason those interest rates are so high. However, the mechanism to bringing that down is potentially not a strike. Maybe the mechanism is making sure that they don't default, putting processes in place by the taxi associations that say, you know, we're not going to let you be part of our association if you're not a good payer.
Exactly. So almost reward drivers for driving properly. So if you have a guy who doesn't get speeding fines, he doesn't break the law, he's almost like...
No, but I think it's further than that.
Graded.
It's,
and the better you get as a driver, the less you pay at the end of the month. I don't know.
Maybe it's less about driving and more about, how they pay the debt.
Yeah.
And the better you are at paying that debt... The less risk the bank's going to see you as, and the less risk the bank sees you as, the better terms you're going to get.
Yeah.
Isn't that what they ordinarily do with a credit check?
Exactly. So maybe the taxi associations need to become a little bit tougher on their members paying the debt.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know the intricacies, so... Mm.
Who knows?
I mean, what sort of collateral is being put up for this? I mean, if they can sit there and repossess the vehicle, but...
No, but that doesn't work.
And then try and get it back into the
system. You know, banks aren't car owners.
Yeah.
So why would the bank want to sit with a car?
Well, I mean, so that they can auction it off. I mean, the same thing. I believe it would be the same thing that happens should you default on a payment or should I default on a payment. They're going to repossess the car. Mm. You haven't paid. Thank you. And now we're going to auction this off, and whatever we can manage to sell it for on auction is going to offset what you owe us. If there's still an amount owed, you owe us, and we can start attaching.
Mm.
And is there a lot for them to attach? Or is there a lot for them to be able to auction off? Because the vehicle is inherently high mileage from the get-go.
Yeah, but banks don't want to repossess cars. They just don't.
No, because then that becomes a problem for them.
They've got to dispose of the thing. Yeah. They've got to get their money back. Yeah. So they don't really
want... It's a bit of a tail chase, though.
Yeah.
It is. There's a big circle here, and we're not going to close it. So let's move on to some good news.
I think we're getting out.
Complicated situation.
Just quickly, George... MotoGP, Formula One. I mean, what a weekend! I watched the MotoGP. Watching the Formula One was like watching a soap opera this weekend. It was absolutely crazy.
I heard it was quite dramatic, but I didn't watch any of it.
Vettel is my driver, of choice. I follow him. I want him to win, and he's leading the championship at the moment. But what a stupid move.
When he drove into the back of Hamilton.
I think the driving into the back of Hamilton was just a racing incident. I don't think that was on purpose. I don't think he tried to ram him. I think Hamilton braked because of the safety car going into the pits. And that's what they do. And I think he rammed into the back of him because he was trying to stay too close so that driver number three didn't pass him.
Yeah.
So I think that was a racing incident. But what he did after that only happens in road rage incidents.
Yeah, when you pull up next to the oak and kind of give him the finger.
That was such a dumb move. And, rush of blood to his head and decided to pull alongside Hamilton. And then show him a couple of fingers. But
they have an argument with the gloves on.
And I honestly don't think, I mean, I haven't followed the story this morning, but I don't think he tried to turn into him on purpose either.
Yes.
I think that also was a result of kind of his, what was going on inside his head and in the car. But all of it culminated into this 10-second stop-and-go penalty. And then Hamilton was leading the race, and his head protection started coming loose.
That's got to piss the driver off.
And you're like, I'm leading this race, I'm going to win, and my flipping head protection's coming loose. He had to go into the pits to get the head protection changed. And guess what? Both of them ended up in the same piece of tar when they came out.
And no, it was insane. So it was Ricardo Bottas and then Stroll.
And he was passed by Bottas just before the finishing line.
Yeah, well, obviously he had top line speed, and he obviously,
those Mercedes are fast.
Yes, yeah.
And he managed to get a toe down that finishing straight and just pass him on the line.
Yeah.
But Stoll, take my hat off to him.
What was it? How old is he?
18?
18.
Years old.
So, I mean, fantastic. Yeah, it was fantastic. Really, really was good. And then Valentino Rossi over Petrucci and Marquez in the... in the MotoGP, which was also really, really exciting, you know.
Yeah. When isn't it, though?
Well, exactly.
It is probably one of the most exciting forms of motorsport.
And they had just under 120,000 people at that track in the Netherlands, which is absolutely huge. Absolutely huge. So very, very exciting F1 and or from the motorsport side of things this weekend, which was really, really cool. Guys, we're going to go to a break shortly, but just before we get on to our main topic, I wanted to just touch base quickly. George, you and I spoke last week. Richard Hammond had an accident in his Rimac supercar. Mm. And we were throwing some questions around just talking about the incident. And there's video footage showing Hammond misjudges his entry speed into this kind of sharp corner. And we know that this Rimac's got a 1,000 kilowatts and it does 0 to 100 in 2.5 seconds.
That's 1,340 horsepower.
Shit. 1,340 horsepower.
I mean,
that's a lot of ponies.
Put that into perspective. It's probably two times an average sports car. More than two times an average sports car?
Comfortably.
Well, if you have a look at the review that we've got today, I mean, that's only 235 kilowatts or something. And you were saying, I mean, it's a proper car. Yeah. So anyway, but we also know that this Rimac doesn't carry any fuel.
It's full electric.
Zero, not one drop of 95 octane in this thing. How did it catch fire?
Just puts in perspective kind of new threat.
100%. And a lot of learnings to come out of this.
They're still reading the reports, and it's plausible. Once again, it's like the whole Ford Cougar thing.
Yeah.
There's cooling systems, and cooling systems use oil.
Yeah.
And the oil and the high heat generated from the batteries and the motors. And if you've ever tried to touch an electric motor afterwards, or your cell phone
or even your laptop they all heat up.
Same thing, you know, and there's four of these motors and a whole batch of batteries in the Concept One.
Yeah, we're not talking heat from like a laptop either. I mean, this, you know, the heat from the Rimac will
multiply kilowatts.
Yeah, exponentially. Yeah. So
it's a megawatt. It's a megawatt car.
I look forward to talking about it now.
Mm.
What? This?
After the break.
After the break. we're talking about it now.
Are we?
Yeah, we're talking about it now before we get onto our main topic.
So if a Ferrari
or
a McLaren had to have this accident, I reckon it would burst into flames. I've seen wrecks
worse than this,
and the thing didn't burst into flames. So it puts into perspective.
You've also seen images of where they've just run hot and they've caught fire without even having the accident because of the mid-engined and the proximity of the extremely hot exhausts and that.
But a regular car wouldn't potentially have caused a caught fire in this particular scenario.
Not like you see in the movies, anyway.
Yeah, no,
cars don't blow up.
No, they don't blow up. Mythbusters prove that
cars
for me.
Pretty much can't blow up.
Yeah. And then it also puts into perspective the absolute power of these electric cars and should they be governed? You know, when they hit our road, should they be governed? Because every dog and his cat is going to be driving an extremely quick car.
Yeah.
What's the price tag on a Rimac Concept One?
No, but forget the Rimac.
No,
all
but
of
even
these
just,
electric
even just
cars
normal electric
are
cars
very fast.
Are they going to be governed?
Whether they do, you know,
the i3 isn't. I can promise you that.
But that's
also about what size motor they put in, what sort of battery capacity, and
let's take an average Tesla. It's doing 0 to 100 in what?
Stupidly quick.
4 seconds.
Less than three and a half seconds. It's doing like 3 seconds. Yeah.
Exactly. So I mean, your average car, like a VW Polo, is doing 0 to 100 in probably about 1,700 seconds. no, I'm kidding. About what in the early teens, maybe
ten to eleven. Yeah.
10 to 11 seconds. And now you get into an electric car that suddenly does 0 to 100 in 3 seconds. Mm. I think there's a bigger problem.
The electric car is going to cost four times the amount of your Polo Viva, though.
Yeah, but so once it gets into full production...
But surely over time, that will come down.
Yes. That will come down, yes. That will come down. But I do believe that the manufacturers aren't going to be that short-sighted, really. Like the i3, 600,000 Rand, I'm going with it because that's the full electric one. So we're not going to compare anything else right now at this point in time. Acceleration, it's not blistering. It's not quick. It's hardly even sprightly.
What is not blistering? 8?
Nowhere near. Like a long weekend. You need like a sundial to check. Okay.
Well, that's not a real electric car in my opinion then.
But it is. And that's the sort of consumer angle. And because they're going to want to appeal to people that are coming out of vehicles that can do 450 to 500 kilometers on a tank, sometimes even more if they're trying to lure the diesel, they need to make sure that the motor is not consuming as much electricity so that the batteries will last. Mm. and that they can package it in something that is the size of a Polo Vivo or the likes.
Yeah.
So I don't foresee that being too much of a problem. It'll be sprightly and quick, but it's not going to be to the point where it's going to need this massive amount of cooling.
Yeah, but I'm talking about a different problem, and that is that amount of speed. Now, that that electric car aside, most of the other electric cars are pretty quick.
Yeah, they're pretty quick.
And this is as much driver error as it is, you know, the car setting alight because of its battery and oil and whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
And I think we're potentially heading for a challenge when it comes to quick electric cars and people not being able to handle them on the road.
Yeah, well, I think they'll take quite a few learnings from this as well, because what I'm pondering is you're saying that the motor is actually in the wheel.
Yes.
And no, because it's direct drive.
Yeah.
That's what makes it so quick.
Yes.
Because there's no loss of energy
going through a drivetrain.
Yeah.
Like I said in that article, if you curb that car, if you flip it on its roof, the motor's right there by the wires and the cooling system and the oil, which is obviously where the fire is happening. Yeah.
Now, I read the same article as well, and it's through... to quote Fight Club here, you know, you've got to send a monkey into space before you can learn some things.
Yeah,
and you've got to be that monkey that's being sacrificed. So, somebody has to. Yeah. Some sacrifice
has to
be
Richard
made.
Hammond. Yeah.
Some sacrifice. Exactly. No, yeah. you hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
Thank you, Richard Hammond.
Yeah.
You've taught us some stuff.
You're going to be able to dial back the safety features that are built into the future's electric cars to Richard Hammond's accident.
100%.
Exactly. What you learned.
100%.
The fact that a driver hasn't been killed by a suspension component in a Formula One car is thanks to Ayrton Senna. He gave up his life to make Formula One safe.
Yeah.
Each and every driver that has passed in the crucible of motorsport, they've learned something from.
All right, guys, listen, we're going to go to a quick break. When we come back, we're going to review the Audi S3 Sportback. And then we are going to get into our main discussion point for the morning. I cannot believe how quickly time's going. So here's a little song for you guys. Sorry to cut that short, guys. A little bit of Blackstreet there for us. But what we do want to get into is the review. So, Chad, you've had the Audi S3 Sportback.
I had it a few weeks ago, actually. And that's the one that's gone out on the site and out live. And I tell you what, actually quite an entertaining car. A very, very easy car to drive quickly.
Okay.
It makes you feel really, really good and really, really fast, but that's because the car's doing a lot of it. So if you are one of those that in a quiet time when you're sitting in the shower and you admit to yourself that I'm maybe not the world's best driver, if you ever have that moment of sort of honesty and clarity, then you steer towards something along the lines. Now, there are only a handful of hatches that subscribe to this sort of hyper hatch mantra of being turbocharged and all-wheel drive and a hatch. And so you're looking at the likes of the A45 AMG, you've got the Focus RS, and you've got the Golf R. So the Audi S3 keeps company with those. So that's the sort of ballpark that we're talking about here. Power-wise, we've got 228 kilowatts, but it's a 400 newton meters that makes it really, really strong and punchy in the gears and gets off the line really quick. And, of course, mate that to the Haldex all-wheel drive system, and you've got great traction. Cornering, it really does flatter you. This car just flatters you left, right, and center.
Really nice car to drive.
Really nice car to drive. It's a nice car to live with as well. And because the Sportback is the 5-door version, it's a little more practical as well. So you've got a bit of boot space there. You've got rear doors. It really is spacious enough. It's a fairly sizable car. It's not as small as what the A3s used to be. Fairly sizable. And the S3's got just enough styling on it to set it apart from the rest of the A3s on the road. But you need to take it in one of the special colors. And the S3 comes in a couple of nice
colors. Well, I was going to ask you, tell me a little bit about this Nano Grey.
You get Nano Grey and Nardo Grey. Now, Nardo Grey is really light. You've got to think it's almost... I can point out something here. But it's...
like that dull, cloudy morning... Joburg Sky color.
That's the Nardo Grey.
Yes.
Now, the Nardo Grey is a couple of shades darker. I want to say that's almost battleship grey.
Okay.
Whereas the Nano Grey is pretty dark, like sort of like battleshipy sort of look to it. And the Nardo Grey is slightly lighter, and that's more like Air Force Grey.
Okay. All right.
And those just that just makes it fantastic in that approach is that it's a color that you don't often see on the
road. It's not a common color, yeah.
But it doesn't look like it's primed either.
No. Okay.
So, you know, there's a little bit of gloss to it. It's not just a flat matte.
Yeah.
Really, really nice.
And interior, very, very nice.
Interior is really nice. I've never been one for the ergonomics of, you know, Audis, but I do like what they do in terms of their tech and their switchgear. And this one, of course, has wonderful tech if you spec it accordingly.
Okay.
And that's the one big gripe is because it is one of the German vehicles, you do sit with quite an extensive options list that can run you 120,000, 150,000 rand just
Audi
on options.
Audi never used to be that way, hey?
Lawrence put it in a very good sense. It's the German club, so you play by the German club rules.
Yeah, but when Audi first came, when they first came into the country, you could buy their cars with almost all the bells and whistles.
Yeah.
And they've like slowly over the years pared that back.
Yeah, they have. They have. And I think it's just, it gives you a chance to tailor the vehicle as to what you need and what you don't need. But the thing is, you do need to spec it, sadly, because you need to spend that additional. So the base price of 646, you know, is just an indication of the base spec.
And then you're going to spend, you're in for 750 10, then if you go all out on this car.
Not even all out. Just specing it with a handful of things. You know, you don't necessarily need electric seats.
Yeah.
The problem is if you have a vehicle that's unspecced, and this doesn't just go for the S3 Sportback, it goes for all of them, is that you're going to get a poor resale.
Yeah.
And nobody's going to want it if you haven't got a couple of
them. Well, I like what you said in the article where you said, you know, the reason you didn't put you don't want to put the infotainment system in because you're going to have that conversation with your mates in the car. They're going to say, well, why didn't you put it in?
Why didn't you? Yes.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, don't let peer pressure push you into speccing it with something that you don't need just so that you can go out there and say, hey, I've got a full spec. If you're the only person that drives it, do you need electric memory seats?
Mm,
no.
No, exactly.
Once it's adjusted, it's adjusted.
Yeah.
Punt in a claw. Save yourself 17K.
Okay, so great car. Comes with a bit of a price tag, but
comes
I mean,
a bit of a price
it is
tag,
a,
but
it
really
is a really
nice.
solid
so
vehicle.
Nice and solid. Just want to touch on something quickly. And
yes.
I want you guys, I've got the review and there's photos and that up on the Auto Trader site of the S3 if you want to go into details of it. So please do go and take a look there. Use the search function, news and reviews, and go and search for Audi S3. So you'll find it there. It'll be the first one that pops up. Go and take a look at some of the photos to see what we're talking about with this colouring and, of course, the interior. I'm currently driving the new Alfa Romeo Giulia.
I saw it in the car park.
I want to gush about this car.
It's an awesome car.
George, it truly, truly is. And I said it in my Instagram post. We're going to be sharing that on our own Instagram as if you want to see some pictures of it. And it's not the QV. It's not the big M3 Eater. Mm. But if you're in the market for a D-segment sedan and you're looking at 3 Series, A4, C-Class, you're a moron, okay? You're a complete and utter moron if you don't at least go and test drive an Alfa Giulia.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Well, I think what we'll do is obviously we'll unpack that in detail in one of our upcoming shows.
We're going to be shooting a video on it, so
fantastic.
Keep an eye open to that one. And yeah, in a few weeks' time, we're going to have that video dropping and you guys will be able to see my exact thoughts.
Fantastic. Lovely. Well, then this takes us to our main topic for the morning, and that is, I know, thank goodness, touch wood, I haven't been affected by this. I don't know if you guys have, but we all know that there are a lot of fraudsters out there who take a chance and quite easily pull the wool over, you know, consumers who don't really understand the car buying process, all the ins and outs and where, you know, the pitfalls can happen. And we know that these are being presented in many different ways. And, you know, we know that they usually occur around the internet, you know, using emails and SMSs.
Phishing scams
of the likes. But car fraud is a reality, and it is something that we deal with. And there's obviously things that one can do to avoid being scammed by either a buyer or a seller, and we can touch on that you know, after this. But George, I want to get straight to the point here. Tell me about Auto Trader Marketplace and where it came about and how it came about and what the product is.
So Auto Trader Marketplace, I mean, Auto Trader had been looking for a way to solve two things for a very long time. For years and years and years, the main problem with buying and selling cars privately was predominantly the safety issue.
Yes.
The second challenge is finance, is to get finance on a privately bought vehicle.
Yes.
Because, you know, the banks, as we were talking about earlier, would risk the private vehicle higher than they would necessarily risk a vehicle bought from a dealership. So we fortunately found, in the last 24 months, we found what we thought is the solution. We partnered with the Bosch service centers to solve the safety and security issue.
That's fantastic.
Now, there are way over 100 to 150 Bosch service centers in the country, which provides a safe meeting place for buyers and sellers of vehicles privately. So that's the first challenge solved, is you want to meet in a safe place.
So we've created an environment where a buyer and a seller can meet without having never met before, but you know you're meeting in an environment where... Yes. Dodgy 100%. Stuff cannot go down.
Mm-hmm. Now you take a step back, and now we've got to solve another issue, and that is we want to introduce a serious buyer to a serious seller,
yes.
Not a tire kicker.
Yeah.
Everybody's short on time in life, and we want to introduce serious buyers to serious sellers. So we make both the seller, the seller's car, and the buyer jump through a bunch of hoops before we make the introduction. Those hoops range from checks to you know, 500,000 point check on the car.
But I mean, these are standard procedures, so yes. It's not we're not making them do anything that they necessarily wouldn't normally need
have to do anyway.
Exactly.
Yes.
So and it doesn't matter how you're selling your car, you're going to have to go through this kind of stuff
anyway.
We just make it easier.
And we you know, for those who don't know how to perform the process or to go through the process, you know, we've got the process lined up, so you don't even have to think about it.
Yeah, and that's a process that you helped with through every single.
Every single stage
that's
of the
fantastic.
Way, both on the seller side and the buyer side, as well as the finance.
Magic. You know, there are obviously, you know, people who have been scammed, and I think with online fraud and how easy it is to, you know, to do fraud nowadays, you know, things like Auto Trader Marketplace have really put the customer, buying and selling customer, at the heart of the solution, really, and it's been created around, you know, making sure that we don't want our customers to be scammed. We don't want people to, you know, have to, you know, go through a whole rigmarole of having the wool pulled over their eyes. And I think Marketplace is really, really a fantastic, you know, product that alleviates this kind of problem.
If you want to go and have a look,
yes.
autotradermarketplace.co.za, one word, obviously, autotradermarketplace.co.za, or you can navigate there from autotrader.co.za, the main site,
yes,
to Auto Trader Marketplace. And if you're selling your car, we believe it's the safest way to sell your car in the country right now. And if you're buying a car, it's the safest way to buy a car.
Yeah, and I love that you put it like that, so that you break it up in two like that, is because it's not just... Auto Trader is not just one side. We don't only care about advertising vehicles, and we care about the people that are actually wanting to buy the vehicles that are advertised. 100%. So it's not just, it's about making the buying and selling process a lot more pain-free, less risky, and just considerably more pleasant.
So you can go to
the beach on the weekend.
No, exactly.
We'll think about the process.
And I think the peace of mind for someone who's wanting to buy a vehicle on Auto Trader Marketplace is if you jump onto the site and you look at the listings, you are guaranteed that that vehicle has been put through, not its paces, but it's had everything checked. So you're not buying a lemon. You really aren't. That car has been vetted. The seller has been vetted. And essentially, to the seller's point, the buyer is obviously screened. So that you know when you're meeting this person at a Bosch service center, you know, you're not dealing with...
That's a serious business.
Yeah, it's a serious... No, absolutely. And I mean, and to kind of qualify that, anything can happen. So we put the car through the paces more so than any other consumer could put the car through its paces in their own right. But, you know, latent defects could still be underlying. Mm-hmm. So what you have to do as a buying consumer is still do your own research on the car. Mm. Don't just take the checks that have been done now this car is absolutely trouble free. It's still a second hand car. You still got to check it out. So still go and do whatever other checks you would do on the car itself.
George, you allude to that. What are some of the things that consumers could do to, you know, to make sure that they're not, you know,
take a mechanic friend with you. You know, if there's somebody in your family,
phone chat.
we are not giving my number out, people.
Actually,
I like sleep.
Actually, drive the car. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll be surprised that, you know, when the paperwork's all in place. Oh no, that's okay. I don't need to drive it. Actually, drive the car.
Yeah.
Do not drive it with the radio on or with any other noise. noise, listen to the car, mm-hmm. try feel it.
Yeah.
And I suppose more importantly, take somebody that's knowledgeable with you.
Yeah.
So that you can check the car out.
Fantastic.
Check for accidents. Look at the lines along the bonnet and along the doors to see that they line up properly. If they don't, the car potentially could have been in an accident.
Well, this alludes to another product that we have, which is obviously vehicle check. So you can take the VIN number, plug that in, and you can get a full historical report on that vehicle, whether it's been in an accident or it's had, you know, stuff done to it, which is really nice that you know you are buying what the seller is actually selling you.
Exactly.
So AutoTrader marketplace.co.za and you know, again, brought to you by the most trusted, you know, motoring brand in the country. And you know, I think it's hats off to us who always put the consumer first and create products because we want to help our consumers, and that's who we are as a brand, and it's what we do. Am I right?
Absolutely. I think Chad put it perfectly. You know, we don't only care about the cars being listed, we also care about the buyers buying.
Fantastic. Well, guys, listen, it's been a fantastic show. I cannot believe that that's the hour up already. And yeah, like, all our reviews and news are on our website. Join us on our social media platforms, and have a absolutely fantastic week.
CliffCentral.com.